Blog Talk Radio.
Tonight is a particular honor for me because, let's face it, my presence on this stage is pretty unlikely. My father was a foreign student, born and raised in a small village in Virginia. He grew up herding goats, went to school in a tin roof shack. His father, my grandfather, was a cook.
Welcome to Current Events with Patrick Cook. I'm your host, Patrick Cook, coming to you live from Dallas, Texas, as I do every Sunday at 4 p.m. Central Time, 5 o'clock Eastern. We are the number one resource for small business and nonprofits. To learn how you can showcase your business or nonprofit, go to our website at TaylorMade101.com. That's TaylorMade101.com and click on affiliates for details. Greetings and salutations to everyone listening across all seven continents. Jimmy and I just returned from Master Chief Keith Hurst's graduation ceremony. Keith just walked across the stage of the University of Oklahoma. That's right, the Big 12. We send a very big congratulations to Keith and his wonderful wife, Paula, and their two boys, Keith and Devontae. Today, we have a lot in store for you. We're going to talk a little bit about the politics of distraction with Common. Shirley Sherrod returns to the USDA. Radio 1 founder Catherine Hughes is now to lead the SBA Advisory Council. And, of course, we would be remiss if we didn't mention John Essence debacle. So I would love to get your comments on these issues. So sound the alarm. Get on Facebook, Twitter, Foursquare, or Tumblr. Send out emails and text messages. Call your friends and family and tell them to tune in right now to Current Events with Patrick Cook. To join the conversation, the number to call is 323-580-5712. Once again, the number to call is 323-580-5712. And for those of you that are listening via Blog Talk Radio, leave your comments. Click the follow button or follow me on Twitter at TaylorMade101. And of course, I'll be reading your tweets live on the air. But first, let's take a look at our current events. By now, most of you have become accustomed to all too familiar notion of the politics of distraction. With pressing issues like near double-digit unemployment, skyrocketing gas prices, the budgeted deficit, growing international crisis, struggling job growth, and more, many on the right would rather avoid creating real solutions by averting our attention to nonsensical issues. This week, the target was Common. The only problem is this time, those screaming the loudest forgot to check their own history. And anyone with an ounce of reality knows that this wasn't the first occasion where a rapper went to the White House, participated in a function, or was acknowledged by an administration. In fact, Bush Sr. invited Eazy-E. You know who Eazy-E is. That's right. The member of the former group NWA. Not only do folks at Fox News and those attempting to create this non-controversy have amnesia about hip-hop's presence at our nation's headquarters, but they also quickly forget their own embrace of Common. Less than a year ago, a report on FoxNews.com referred to the lyricist as a rap legend, very positive, and a conscious rapper. How quickly did they forget? Nevertheless, we all know Common, all love and dear Common. Really believe that Common is on the right side of this issue, but I would love to get your comments about this as well. Now, I mentioned Shirley Sherrod also returns to USDA. Now, Shirley Sherrod, if you recall, that the U.S. Department of Agriculture employed, she was an employee who was forced out after a portion of a videotape was misleading, used to show her making a racial insensitive remark. So we'll start working at the USDA again. She will be working here at the USDA pretty soon. Is in a report by Politico. But she's not getting her old job back. Instead, Ms. Sherrod will help the USDA improve its civil rights record. Now, she will be a contract employee leading one of three field programs designed to bolster relations between the USDA and minority farmers and ranchers. Support for the program is among several recommendations contained in a sweeping two-year study released Wednesday that examined decades of discrimination claims by African Americans, Latinos, women, and Native Americans. Agriculture Secretary Tom Vilsack commissioned the study shortly after taking office in 2009 and well before he signed off on Sherrod's dismissal in July 2010. The three organizations, the Southwest Georgia Project for Community Education, the National Latino Farmers and Ranchers Trade Association, and the Intertribal Agriculture Council, will target minority farmers in the Southeast, the Southwest, and Native Americans reservations. USDA Deputy Director of Communications said last week, "The programs are part of our continued effort to build a new civil rights era," he said, after settling costly discrimination lawsuits brought by the minority farmers. Now, Sherrod will run the Southwest Georgia Project, which she co-founded. The program, he added, is considered among the best Southeastern regions organizations focused on the issues and populations affected by this assessment and has a long, strong relationship and understanding of the work of the USDA. Also in other news, Radio 1 founder Catherine Hughes is to lead the SBA Advisory Council. This is great. We got a lot of women here coming up in leadership here. Radio 1 co-founder Catherine Hughes was recently appointed to the U.S. Small Business Administration, which is also known as the SBA, Council on Underserved Communities. Hughes was one of 15 appointees selected. Now, building on SBA's core program and recovery initiatives, this council will provide input, advice, and recommendations on strategies to help strengthen competitiveness and sustainability for small businesses in underserved communities. These strategies will be focused on increasing entrepreneurship and technical assistance, creating new and strengthening existing outreach and training, and raising awareness in underserved communities of SBA programs and services. The council is chaired by Catherine Hughes, founder of chairperson of Radio 1 and TV 1, and will have 20 members who represent a diverse range of backgrounds and geographic areas. Now, this is a quote. "One of SBA's core missions is to support small businesses in traditionally underserved communities, including minorities, women, veterans, people with disabilities, and in rural areas," SBA Deputy Administrator Mary Jones said. The Council on Underserved Communities will provide valuable insight and advice into how we can ensure that small businesses in these communities throughout the country have access to the tools they need to grow, create jobs, and win the future. The council's first meeting will be held in July in D.C. Before the first meeting, members of the council will hold listening sessions in their regions to hear from small business owners and members of the community about what they need from the SBA. 30 years ago, I grew my business with the help of an SBA loan, says Kathy Hughes. Now, she says, "I'm so pleased to be chairing the Council of Underserved Communities and help entrepreneurs and communities across the country take advantage of those same opportunities possess." This is a great opportunity for small businesses and underserved communities to now get themselves engaged, get involved, and to be plugged into these issues. And also, Bill Gates was reportedly giving out a $7 million check for public education. That's right. A $7.6 million grant from the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation will help attract top-notch professionals to careers in public education leadership positions. The money went to Education Pioneers, a nonprofit that works with organizations including Chicago Public Schools, KIPP, D.C., Los Angeles Unified School District, and the United States Department of Education. The organization operates fellowship programs designed to provide experience in leading and educating education organizations to professionals at critical career junctures. The idea is for these high achievers to use their unique skills and prior work experience on projects like as using student-level data to pinpoint areas for teacher intervention, researching best practices to improve curriculum and instructions, and creating strategic plan for teachers. Schools and education organizations that have already benefited from Education Pioneers placement have seen improvement trickle down to the very granular level of improving student achievement, said Don Shapley of the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. The work Education Pioneer does, attracting and keeping top talent in important positions outside the classroom, has already made a huge difference for school districts and public charter schools that don't have the budget or time to undertake it themselves. We are with the Gates Foundation building on that kind of success as a start, as a smart investment. So I would like to get your comments on any or all of these issues and to join the conversation. The number to call is 323-580-5712. Once again, the number is 323-580-5712. We're going to take a quick break, and when we return, we're going to open up the phone lines, take your calls and comments, and get my co-host, Jima, to weigh in on these and other issues. We'll be right back. You're listening to Current Events with Patrick Cook. Current Events with Patrick Cook is joining the fight with First Lady Michelle Obama to help feed hungry children and stop childhood obesity. During the school year, many children receive free and reduced price breakfast and lunch as a result of the school breakfast and national school lunch programs. However, when the last bell sounds, marking the end of the school year, for many, it marks the beginning of hunger that will plague them throughout the summer. Here at Current Events, we're going to fill that nutrition gap and make sure children can get the nutritious meals they need. To learn how you can help with this worthy cause, go to TaylorMade101.com and click on Hunger Free. That's TaylorMade101.com and click on Hunger Free.
Cook Enterprises have joined forces with Google Inc. and Amazon.com. With this new partnership, our companies, TaylorMade Training and Consulting, Current Events, and Ask Jima, can now offer you the best deals 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Whether you're looking for a discounted book for your book club or a very special gift for a friend, family member, or loved one, TaylorMade's Marketplace is where you should go first. Visit our website at TaylorMade101.com and click on Marketplace to get the best deals today.
Welcome back to Current Events with Patrick Cook. We're going to open up the phone lines here in just a moment and hear from our listeners across the continent, all 7 continents. But in the meantime, I would like to get my co-host, Jima, to weigh in on some of these issues. Jima, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Now, this week, an entire news cycle was devoted to Common. This craziness about him being some gangster rapper, basically. Now, was this truly the politics of distraction, or was they just merely being honest?
this was the politics of distraction at the highest form. I don't think I've, I mean, they've outdone themselves on this one. Common, of all rappers, is by far the least one that one would call controversial. And although he may have talked about an incident in a song as it related to Asada Shakur or something that happened back in 1973, if they were to have listened to the whole song, he goes on at the end of that song to say, but don't do what I just talked about doing. So, you know, the fact that they, you know, honed in on one or two lines of a song, that's what they do. I mean, we really shouldn't be surprised, but I think we're surprised because it was Common. I mean, if they had said anybody else, you know, Kanye or, you know, a couple of Jay-Z, I mean, you know, a couple other people's words are a little edgy, I could understand, but Common, no. This was, like I stated, this was politics of distraction at the highest level, the highest. It was almost comical.
So why did you get so much attention, though? I mean, so we all know and believe that what you just talked about, but why did this get so much attention on the right?
It got so much attention because we are not in charge of our own story. And there was no counter. There was no balance. There was no one that immediately came out and said anything. I shouldn't say no one. It wasn't enough people that immediately came out and said anything. You know, the intellectuals of the world, somebody should have had a press conference. You know, just like their speaker and their talking heads get on TV and say things. You know, we don't have a balance in that of someone getting on, speaking on our behalf and calling things out when they happen. We don't have that. So that's why. And so when something is stated and then people think it's true, it grows, it becomes true until enough people began to say, wait a minute, that's not true. But it took too many days for somebody to say, on TV for somebody to say. Now, those in the barbershop and the beauty shop and the grocery stores and at home, we were all saying, not Common, but we're not on TV. We don't have a microphone. So it took too long for those that do have the microphone to be heard and to be heard in the masses in which eventually it was.
What's interesting is that the fact that we don't have a lot of media outlets and the fact that the social media, it gets the message out in pockets, but it doesn't have the power of getting to the masses instantaneously. Eventually, you know, most of people that when they hear something, they can tweet and blog and talk about it, and it eventually spread. But there's an interesting dynamic when you have an audience of people that you can get to instantaneously, you know, through millions and millions of viewers, especially when you need regular syndicated shows that put these bad messages out there that permeate that particular viewing audience. And so my question is,
right,
since that message has, you know, got put out there, do you think that the president would be affected in his reelection campaign by this nonsense?
No, we will have forgotten about this by the time it all comes out, by the time the election comes around. Believe you me, they will find some other distraction. This will go away here in the next couple of weeks, and they'll find something else to create to make an issue. So, no, this won't have any long-lasting impact. But it should have a long-lasting impact as it relates to our culture and how they misrepresent our culture. And the statement that Bill O'Reilly stated when he makes the statement that the president and the first lady are out of touch with regular Americans, well, who is he talking about? Because in my opinion, his regular Americans is white people like him, not people that's like me.
Mm.
So, you know, but they make those statements, and because he said it, then it's factual. So the president is out of touch with regular Americans. Well, I need a definition of what's regular. And you know, who is the regular American that he's out of touch with? He's not out of touch with me, and I consider myself to be pretty regular. So, you know, what did he mean by that? What was the implications with that? What was the coded message in that statement? You know, I took it as he's out of touch with white men, basically, because those were the ones screaming the loudest or that at least started the fire. And then, you know, other people jumped in. But as for your question in the long run, no, this won't have any impact on it. I think those who finally did get up to the mic and start talking has, as you did in your piece, been able to remind those people at Fox and around, you know, the other times that they've been members of hip-hop community at the White House, or even their own words of what they had to say about him themselves six months ago.
Yeah. So taking a quick shift here, along the same lines about messaging, because when Shirley Sherrod, that video came out that misrepresented what she was saying, again, it permeated the society so quickly that it made the head person react in such a manner that was just crazy, right? He didn't do any investigation. He just went with it. But again, because you know, these regular Americans, when they see something or when they get these messages out, they immediately react without all of the evidence. And now here it is, she's been vindicated, it looks like, and now the department, the U.S. Department of Agriculture, the USDA, is now offering her another position. What do you think is the message in this?
Well, I think she's at a point where she is in control of how she wants to assist in this matter. She's not going to go back and work for them. She'll be in a contracted position, which gives her a little bit more leeway, a little bit more freedom. And it also lets us know that they know they need her to get the message out in a part of the country that she knows very well down there in the southeastern part of the country. So they know that they need her. And so for her to go back, she's recognizing that the greater good is to assist those farmers and those communities down there that have been affected by the discrimination by USDA as it relates to minority farmers. So she's been able to set a great example of knowing you were wrong, you were misrepresented, you were mistreated, but when given an opportunity, she does a greater good by being at the table, being in the room, than she does outside the room, still being mad and angry. She's channeled that to press them to do better by those affected by their practices and their policies as it relates to minority farmers. So I think it's a great, great move on her part. She's had time to let things settle. She's worked some things out in her mind and in her spirit. This is my assumption. I've not talked with her. So it seems as though she's had some time to work through some things and to navigate those landmines and realize that she can do a much greater good by being in the room and at the table and providing the leadership that's needed to make things happen and make that department a better department because of her being on the ground and in the room.
Do you think she also brings a lot of credibility to the position now? People, you know and trust and believe that, you know, she's going to be acting on their behalf?
Oh, without a doubt. And the sad part about it was she never lost credibility with the people. The U.S. Department of Education U.S. Department of Agriculture is who lost credibility. Mm-hmm. Ms. Sherrod never lost credibility because those who knew her knew what her story was, knew what her history was, knew what she stood for and for whom she stood for. So this just further validates to them she really does care because she's taken all of that and she's still going to go back and work with those very same people that mistreated her and basically threw her out without a moment's notice to even think about what she had done. So she stands firm on her credibility. What she's doing is to bridge the gap and to help the Department of Education regain some of their accountability because they're the ones that lost it.
Do you think there are a lot of other women that go through the same situation throughout their jobs across the country?
In what regard?
In the fact that, you know, they try to be tainted. They're put in positions where You know, their integrity is questioned, and you know, they even lose their jobs in a lot of cases, and you know, and then in some cases, ask to come back, but instead choose not to.
Without a doubt, it happens probably every day, several times throughout the course of a day, that a woman's ability is questioned, a woman's decisions are questioned, how she goes about doing her daily work is questioned, and put her side by side by a man, and if he was to have done the same thing, it would have been considered brilliant. So, yes, it happens every single day. But as women in leadership, what I often say, from a personal standpoint, I go into a room recognizing that as a woman, there's already some hesitancy to have any involvement with me just based on the fact that I'm a woman. Now, you add to that I'm a black woman. Oh, my goodness, here she comes. So I already go into a room knowing that there's already some issues with who I am, and there are some questions about what I know. There are some questions about how did I get here. I already know all that. So I because I know that, I go in with the mindset knowing I'm going to have to work twice as hard, sometimes quadruple harder than what the average person is working. I'm not going to be able to do what I see my male counterparts doing. I already know that. So when you are aware of what you're doing and what you bring to the table, you go ahead on and you make those adjustments. Some people say compromise. Some people say you bow down. At the end of the day, you got to do what's best for you and your family. So I say you make those adjustments to your style, to your approach, until you, you know, basically, for lack of a better word, till you win everybody over to you and they realize, well, she really does know what she's talking about. Oh, she really does have a good handle on this. Oh, that's what she meant when she done that. And yet, you know, so when you do that, you create, you will eventually be in control of that room. And that's what you really want, is to be in control of that room and be in control of those processes that you are ultimately accountable and responsible for. But, yes, I would say daily, several times out of the day, a woman that's in any position of authority is called to task on something that a male counterpart would never be called to task on.
So what do you think the lessons, that the takeaway for women or men, for that effect, the takeaway that from Shirley Sherrod's experience?
Well, I think what worked for Shirley Sherrod was what I stated earlier, was that she did have some historical data to support her credibility. So when it came out the way it came out, there was enough people that was like, no, that's not her, you know. And so her work ethic had already been proven that she was one that was open and honest and had shared her life story enough where people knew who she was. Knew what she stood for. The farmers themselves came to her defense. You know, white and black, you know, came to her defense. And so that was based on purely the relationship she had built with those people, so that when those attacks come, and they will come, sometimes it's best that you don't speak up for yourself. You let somebody else speak for you. I think Scripture says, may the works I've done speak for me. The work that she had done with those people for all of those years, that is what spoke for her. And that table turned very quickly on Mr. Vilsack, I think that's what his name is, in the Department of Agriculture, as well as Breitbart, the one who, you know, put the story out, as well as Fox. I guarantee you they don't want to revisit this again, because it turned on them very quick, because that was the wrong person to try to attribute those things to. So it was her works that spoke for her that allowed others to stand up for her in a time when it wasn't always in the best for her to speak for herself. So my lesson to women would be those of us in leadership is to ensure that what you're doing is in alignment to the overall mission and goal of whatever agency it is you've been charged with. And stay within those guidelines. Nurture people. Develop people. Let people know that you're there for them, so that when the things come at you, and they're going to come, you'll have somebody that can stand up in the room quickly and say, oh, no, that she wouldn't do anything like that, or are you sure that's what she meant by that? You'll have somebody there to stand and question for you, and that's what happened in this situation, I believe.
Outstanding. We'll be back in a moment.
Current events where Patrick Cook is joining the fight with First Lady Michelle Obama to help feed hungry children and stop childhood obesity. During the school year, many children receive free and reduced price breakfast and lunch as a result of the school breakfast and national school lunch programs. However, when the last bell sounds, marking the end of the school year, for many, it marks the beginning of hunger that will plague them throughout the summer. Here at Current Events, we're going to fill that nutrition gap and make sure children can get the nutritious meals they need. To learn how you can help with this worthy cause, go to TaylorMade101.com and click on Hunger Free. That's TaylorMade101.com and click on Hunger Free.
Cook Enterprises have joined forces with Google Inc. and Amazon.com. With this new partnership, our company, TaylorMade Training and Consulting, Current Events, and Ask Jima can now offer you the best deals 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Whether you're looking for a discounted book for your book club or a very special gift for a friend, family member, or loved one, TaylorMade's Marketplace is where you should go first. Visit our website at TaylorMade101.com and click on Marketplace to get the best deals today.
Welcome back to Current Events with Patrick Cook. Now, before we left, you really hit the nail on the head, and I didn't want to stifle your comment with my comments on top of that, but I thought you did an outstanding job kind of laying out the lessons that one can take from Sugar Sherrod, because I agree with you 110%. And I think that if people listen to the show today, they will be able to draw a lot of strength from your comments there, and I really appreciate that. So I want to turn now a little bit to the issue with Catherine Hughes. It was interesting to me that she was selected to be to lead the Small Business Administration Council. Now, this was a very strategic move. What do you think about this?
I think it's an excellent move, as I stated, because I believe her history of having started out as a small business, a minority-owned business, being a female. So she has had all those things, she has all those experiences to draw from. I think it is an excellent, because she's turned the small business into a large, you know, million-dollar operation, I believe. And so I think because of how she started, starting getting that small business loan herself, going through that process being rejected, and then finally, you know, saying, okay, you got everything we need to get you started, and then believing enough in what she was doing to take it all the way is just a great testimony. And she can really be an advocate in terms of what, you know, there's differences in small businesses. Small businesses for minorities and small business overall, and she can speak to that in such a way that one can only get when you've experienced it. So I think it's an excellent idea. Excellent.
Yeah, I like the fact that she was able to start out with a small business loan, and the fact that she is now can be an advocate for something that she's experienced from the ground up. So
exactly.
I think it's a great thing. We're going to go to our phone lines right now, and we're going to take a call. Welcome to Current Events with Patrick Cooks. What's your name and where are you calling from?
Hello, and how are you?
Absolutely wonderful. What's your name and where are you calling from?
This is the Esquire, Abby A. Phelps, also known as your Motor City Maharani, calling from the Motor City itself.
Outstanding.
Yes, we're enjoying a combination of seasons here. We were summer yesterday. We're called a mid between fall and late summer today. So up Sumner, that's what we are today.
Oh, right. So you have a comment on some of the issues we're talking about today?
Oh, yeah, and I heard you talking about the small business, venture. And you know something, I really would like to say this. Here in the city of Detroit, we once had a very strong entrepreneurship program for people who had a vision, and you know there was funding available through Wayne State University. that, you know, would help them with their small business ventures.
Mm-hmm.
And but under the Bush administration, I hate to be, you know, utilizing the political striata of things, but it is what it is and the way it is.
Mm-hmm.
But under the Bush administration, they literally obliterated that program. People now who want, you know, to get their businesses up and moving, they better make sure that they get the necessary connections of networking, because the fiscal support is not there. I know the president has definitely stated that he's putting more money by way of small businesses being established, but when you go to these lending institutions, these, you know, establishments, they make the criteria so difficult. It is very discouraging. It's very disparaging. It will really turn a person off. And I think that some of that bureaucracy that they've created through this, these financial institutions needs to be eliminated.
Do you think there are some advantages to now having Catherine Hughes lead this council for underserved communities?
I believe that there is a great advantage in that. But, see, the thing is that we don't want to get sold on the personality and the image. This individual needs to become truly an advocate and remember that the steps, you know, the very criticalities that it took for her to get to where she is, and she needs to apply that. You know, advocating once and saying, oh, support, you know, small business establishments and entrepreneurs, and then you sit down on the job. You got to be perpetual. You got to be fervent with this, because when they tried to, the state tried to take over our school district back in 1994, and, you know, there were a couple of people that stepped into play a few times. I made it a perpetual venture to make sure that this district would not get taken over by the state of Michigan, because you know what? Education reflects the community and the people that are citizens thereof, and the same thing applies. She needs to be a much stronger advocate and get some more network out there, trying to reach out with other people who may have had similar experiences and build that collaboration. Start writing those grants. Start doing those proposals, and then produce some degree of funding or fiscal support to individuals who really want to get into owning their business.
You know, what I liked about this particular appointment is the fact that, as Jima was talking about earlier, is the fact that she has actually went through the process. I mean, she know what it's like to be a small business owner. She know what it's like to be an entrepreneur. She know what it's like to go out and get the funding that's required. So that experience alone gives her a different perspective, especially being a minority, than one would not be able to get if they didn't have to go to experience. But the second part of that, what I like, is the fact that they're going to go out before, you know, quite naturally when you're in a position of leadership, you think that this is what the people need. I'm going to tell you, you need to do this, and A, and then B, and then C, and this is what you need to do. But instead, what I hear from the reports are that they're going to go out and create these committees, where they go out into communities and they start asking the people, how can we serve you? That right there is an indication that they're going to be moving in the right direction, as opposed to going into a community that says, here's what we're going to provide you. They're going to go into the community and asking, well, how can we serve you? That right there was a good indication to me.
That's good. That's a very good point that you made. That's wonderful that's going to happen. But what she needs to do, because I know when we were fighting against the state, we actually, you know, got people, the stakeholders from the community, you know, to serve on this particular council, because when people have ownership, there will be great fellowship, and the response level will be astronomical. She needs to make sure she reaches out to those people who are struggling in this area and incorporate them on the committees. Well, you know, it takes more of a sense of formation of legitimacy and authenticity.
Absolutely.
Yes, and I hope that she does that and expand that vision, because she's a veteran, and people respect people when they're older, they're seasoned, and they have a lot of experience. And to reach out and to get people who are at the grassroots level, who may just be scratching the crux, and pull them in, it will really send a stronger message.
Absolutely. All right, we're going to shift gears here, and I want to talk about John Ensign. This guy, the story every time I hear some new developments about this story, it just amazes me. And so I want to read for you all out there, the listening audience out there, about if you haven't heard, John Ensign, the Republican of Nevada, was first elected to the Senate in 2000, and by 2009 was being discussed as a potential presidential contender. But his political fortunes plummeted when he admitted that year to an affair with a former campaign staffer who was also the wife of a top aide. Facing an ethics inquiry, Mr. Ensign announced on April 21st that he would resign from the Senate effective May 3rd. Now, a Senate Ethics Committee investigation had begun after disclosures that Mr. Ensign's parents paid $96,000 to an aide, Douglas Hampton, who was also said that the senator had helped him line up lobbying clients after he left his Senate job. The senator acknowledged that his resignation was inspired in part to avoid formal charges of wrongdoing. But on May 12th, the committee asked the Justice Department to reopen its investigation of Mr. Ensign, saying it had found evidence that he had conspired to help a former aide violate a lobbying ban, had broken campaign finance laws, and had obstructed an investigation into wrongdoing, which began after he admitted having had an affair with the aide's wife. The action makes it clear that Mr. Ensign is going to continue to face scrutiny and possibly even criminal charges. According to a remarkable detailed Senate report released the following day, Mr. Ensign's staff deleted incriminating emails, and the senator himself may have lied under oath to thwart a separate investigation by the Federal Election Commission. The report, a result of the most extensive Senate ethics investigation in at least two decades, urged the government to consider criminal charges against Mr. Ensign. The Ethics Committee had taken the rare steps of hiring an experienced former federal prosecutor as a special counsel to help oversee the investigation of Mr. Ensign, which started shortly after his admission that he had an affair with Mr. Hampton's wife, Cynthia, his former campaign treasurer. Investigators said that they found evidence that the $96,000 from Mr. Ensign's parents was, in fact, a severance payment, meaning it might have violated federal election law. The committee also examined the role of Mr. Ensign's played in helping Mr. Hampton to get a job as a lobbyist after he left Mr. Ensign's Senate office. So, Jima, I want you to weigh in on this thing. What is going on with Mr. Ensign here?
Once again, you have a situation where people in position of power, they sometimes get drunk off of that power. They lose sight of reality because they're in such a bubble and such a world. And it's real simple. He just got caught up. I mean, there was so many things that there was so many times he could have, you know, turned away from this, but he couldn't. As he stated in his own words, he just couldn't leave her alone. And the affair is not, you know, the issue as much as all of those other things that happened in terms of the payout or alleged payouts and getting her a job and getting the husband a job and all of these things. One has to ask, I would, well, in what other instances have you used poor judgment as in your office of senator? So we know you've used it, poor judgment, in the personal life. But has there been anything, you know, I wonder if there's any investigation going on, any decisions, any committees that he was a part of, any where things may have not been completely above board. So mm-hmm. I think when it's all said and done, you know, those are going to be some of the things that's going to come out probably. And it's not a good look for him right now at all. And I'm glad he finally decided to step down, which he should have stepped down when it first came out, but he wanted to hang on in there and have a good face on. But it's sad and it's funny because the organization he was so affiliated with is so strong on quote unquote Christian values and being a family man and all of these, and here he is having his mistress living in the house with him. It's unbelievable.
So
this is the same senator that, you know, had all those things to say about Clinton when Clinton was in office and what had happened
right
to him, and let's get rid of him. So Right, at the highest level of hypocrisy. So,
yes.
You know, there's no love lost. I don't feel sorry for him at all. It's sad. It's funny is what it is. It's funny.
Oh, I got something. Yes.
Let me get Abby the Esquire to weigh in on this issue. What do you think about this guy?
Oh, I'm like Kima. I feel no sympathy for him. Because you know what? A tangled web we weave when we seek to deceive. When President Clinton had his little minuscule, you know, encounter with this young woman, Monica Lewinsky, he was big-mouthing and bad-mouthing him, talking about him. When you live in a glass house, beware how you throw stones. No, they should prosecute him to the furthest extent of the law. You know the experience about what happened with the previous mayor, Kwame Kilpatrick, here in the city of Detroit, right, guys?
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Oh, yes. Now, typically so, they said crucify him. You know, they stripped him of his bar license. He lost his teaching certificate. He lost his honor. He lost his dexterity. He certainly lost his job. You know, he lost his credibility as a family man, as an honorable leader. He lost his bar association credentials. His mother, as a result, lost her position as U.S. Congresswoman. She lost her job. And so he's now sitting in penitentiary waiting on the next go-around, in which they're saying that he may be facing another series of charges as it relates to money laundering, you name it, they claimed it. So if they're going to turn around and take a mayor who doesn't make a fraction of what the pay is at his level and they're going to stone him to death, let him be stoned as well. Because you know what? They obliterated his text messages. Do like they did Mayor Kilpatrick. Go into the archives of that company and pull those documentational records. They can pull those text messages. They did it here with the mayor. They took his text messages all the way back to 2003, when he first got the empowerment of his office. Do the same thing to this man. So if you made a public example out of this man because he was of African American ethnicity, do the same thing to him.
Now, Jima, he didn't commit a crime, though. I mean, he exercised poor judgment, you're right. He cheated, you're right. But Jima, he didn't commit a crime.
We don't know that he didn't commit a crime, because
that's
that's what the issue is that was those payments illegal? As it relates to his position, you know, there's certain things you can't do when you're an elected official.
That's right.
Those documents that he had his parents sign that he drew up and came up with, were those legal documents? Was he, you know, so that's
what like
the,
they were
did he obstruct? And did he pay a part in some obstruction when they were doing the original investigation? So
that's
what's
right.
coming under fire now. The issue isn't
that's
the
right.
affair, because people have affairs every day. It was all the things to try to cover up the affair that is the question right now, and whether or not money was paid to them as quote unquote hush money, as a part to keep them silent about the affair. Because once the affair became public knowledge, you know, what did he do to try to cover it up? And was any
Couldn't
of those
nothing.
Things that he tried to do illegal? And that's where they're at right now. And did it violate some rules as being a senator? You know, they have a whole
it's
set of ethics rules,
that's
they have to abide by. So did it violate some kind of rule? And that's why they're wanting the Department of Justice to come back in and open it back up again.
But Abby, even though if he violated code of ethics, it's not something that they can prosecute him on.
But you know what? And I believe what Takima said is applies to any civic or governmental, federal government, or state official. There is a specific code of ethics that you withhold at all times. When you're a congressman, when you're a mayor, when you're a senator, you are that official 24/7 and then some. Whatever you do outside of your job reflects the posture that you have as leadership. And as they did our mayor, they took him to court. Actually, the chief prosecution took him to court, and they questioned him. Do the same thing to this man. They asked him a question, is it or is it not true that you were having an affair with Christine Beattie? And he said, I don't want to answer. He says, answer the question. And he admitted, and then he said that he didn't do it. And then they said, okay, you that's perjury. You lied. You lied under oath. Okay, put this guy under the same standards because his official status is higher than the mayor's. Put him on the same status. Let's see whether or not he comes clean. And if he doesn't come clean, I'm going to be watching. America's going to be watching to see whether or not he'll get the same type of implications that the mayor got. So you know what? To me, this crime is even more severe because you're at the federal level, you know, the central level of administration, the highest level and the anarchy of the law of the land. You know that you knew better. And with that $96,000, you know, hey, why was it paid? Investigate, you know, just as the way it was done to our mayor. They backtracked him through his organization and found some, you know, incredulous spending habits that was utilized through the fund. People were being paid for jobs they were not doing. Check this man's track record and see where it leads. And I want to see if the same implications are wrought upon him that it was the first young African-American mayor in the city of Detroit.
Mm-hmm.
Two sets of laws, two sets of justice systems. No, justice is justice on any level. Has no color.
So she's supposed to be blind, right?
Right. Hey, Takima, she takes that blindfold off and kind of peeps, you know?
Yes, she does. Yes, she does.
Yes, she does.
She peeps often.
Yes, she does.
She peeps often.
That's right. That's
now,
right, too
yeah.
often.
So, Jima, do you think that he will get any type of prosecution, or do you believe that at the end of the day they will say, you know, it's a slap on the wrist. He violated some code of ethics of the senatorial committee, whatever they have of in the Senate committee, and be done with it. What do you think is going to happen here?
Well, I think two things are going to happen. I think because initially the Department of Justice did not do anything, which forced some other groups that had some concern in this to go out and continue to have this investigation. Now, he was warned by another senator, Santorum, that the ethics people was getting ready to come down on him, which is why he went on ahead and resigned like he did. So you have two major senators that play or people in Congress that on the Republican side that names you hear often because of comments they make or committees they on and decisions that they make. That's Rick Santorum, and then that's Tom Coburn out of Oklahoma. Both of these men have been implicated in some of the shenanigans of John Ensign. So because of that, I'm pretty sure that Department of Justice is going to go ahead on and take a look back at this and see if he did commit some things that were not only ethical but criminal. And if so,
yeah.
I believe they will go ahead on and go after him, whether or not
mm-hmm.
he's a senator or not. You break the law. The law is the law. So if
that's
he's
right.
done some things that were not just unethical in his role as senator, but were illegal as a person living in the United States, then yeah, he's going to have to answer for that, and I think they will.
That's right.
Abby, what would you like to see happen? You mentioned you kind of juxtaposed his situation with Mel Kilpatrick's situation. How do you think justice should be served in this case?
Well, you know, like Kima said, and I'm saying, Patrick, is that it should be blind, you know, pull down the blindfold, you know, and make sure that this man is held accountable. And that was ethical reasons, we know he totally was unorthodox in his behavior. Criminal reasons, do some thorough investigation. And I believe we'll see another Senegal. You know what happened with Senegal? The congressman's wife, Monica Conyers, who was the president of the city council, is now serving time because of the underlying scandal of Senegal, which resulted in her getting paid under the table for a job that she never did, but yet received pay and compensation because she approved of a contractual agreement. So you know what? Do the investigation, do the work, hold him accountable, and if he did something criminal, make sure he's prosecuted to the fullest extent of the law. And I don't mean to be funny, but I got to say this. Democrats never had it so good. This is totally a terrible year for the Republican Party. It's enough that Palin was the best weapon that the Democrats had in securing the election. I see this year as being a landslide victory. It's not a good year to be a Republican. I hate to say that.
Yeah, I agree. It's not looking good right now. I mean, they just keep coming. But they're making it so easy, and I think it's a time where as Democrats usually don't fight like the Republicans fight. But I think they saw what happened a couple years ago during the whole healthcare thing. It took Democrats too long to respond to all that nonsense that the Republicans and the conservatives was putting out. Whereas now they are, you know, they're on the front end of this thing as it relates to Medicare and Medicaid and what the Ryan plan wants to do. Where now you have the Republicans sending the president a letter talking about let's work together on this and let's not berate one another in public. Really, really, this is. This is what y'all want after y'all is dogging on TV and just make up stuff. And it's just so far-fetched. And it's so remotely from the truth. And now they want to say that the Democrats is coming out talking about them and making up stuff. And so they want us to basically now they want to play fair all of a sudden now because the heat is on them. They went back to their districts and their constituents was like, no, you're not touching my Medicare. You're not touching my Medicaid. You can find another way to get some money in the budget, but don't mess with those two. And now they're seeing, you know, people are not so in love with them and don't necessarily agree with them. I agree. This is a great time to be on the opposite side of where they stand. Because they're getting dark thrown at them from every angle, and they just make it so easy. Just like, you know, we talked about earlier with Fox talking about Conan and forgetting their own archive and their own history of what they said. You know, not what anybody else said, but they had a big piece on him one day. You know, so it's like, really? So I just think that the issue is we just got to have more people on TV, reminding the public of the things that they say and reminding the public of the hypocrisy of that party and reminding the public about, you know, how they really, you know, who they're really most in love with is big business. They're not in love with the little people.
They're in love with big business.
And so we just got to make sure that we stay on that message.
Absolutely.
All right. Well, that is our show for today, but I want to give you the Esquire an opportunity to talk a little bit about your show, when it airs, so all of my listeners out there can know to tune in to your show.
Certainly. On Fridays at 3:30 p.m., the Esquire Strikes Back. You news and views as well as rave reviews about current information and things that you don't even hear on the mainstream media. We go there because we're square and we're certainly fair. Oh, yeah. And I certainly want to talk this week and hope you can join me, Patrick and Kima, because you know I pulled up some very interesting information. My friend actually has a cousin that works for Al Jazeera Network over in the Saudi Arabian Emirates. And what happened was that she disclosed some information to me on why they really had to kill Osama bin Laden. On September the 11th, he was planning on assassinating the president. I'll tell you more information about it Friday. You got to join me. It's hot.
All righty. Well, that's our show today. I'd like to thank the Esquire for joining us. And, of course, I always like to thank my co-host, Jima. Just remember to go out to visit her blog at askjema.blogspot.com. That's askjema.blogspot.com. Well, that's our show for today. I would like to thank all our listeners out there for tuning in to Current Events with Patrick Cook. You're listening to Current Events with Patrick Cook. I'm your host, Patrick Cook, coming to you live from Dallas, Texas. I do every Sunday at 4 p.m., 5 o'clock Eastern. We are the number one resource for small business and nonprofits. Now, don't forget to bookmark this site and visit my blog at TaylorMadeTalkRadio.blogspot.com. That's TaylorMade Talk Radio, all one word, TaylorMadeTalkRadio.blogspot.com. Until next time, remember, it is written, my people are destroyed for the lack of knowledge. So stay engaged, stay informed, and stay plugged in to Current Events with Patrick Cook. You're listening to the sounds of Josh Spencer in Sweet Dreams. Take us away, Joyce.